Tonight, we review Transformers: Dark of the Moon. You're listening to Geek Existence Transformers.
Now, all we need is a little energon and a lot of luck.
So welcome to Geek Existence Transformers.
I be your host, Eggleg Fearful, and with me be...
Spooky Grabbit and Calibatron. I was going to say, I remember when I first got into collecting.
Predacons, terrorize!
Hello once again to all you listeners in listener land out there, and welcome to you once again to Geek Existence Transformers. This is episode 30, recorded June 30th, 2011. I am, as always, Weird Wolf, along with Insane Galvatron.
Hello.
And joining us tonight as a guest host is fantastic photographer and Transformers, TFR Cool.
Hey, guys.
So, TFR Cool, welcome to Geek Existence Transformers. We're happy to have you.
Welcome aboard.
Care to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I joined the fandom back in 2008. It was when I first got my taste of Transformers Online, and first gotten, you know, little camera, started taking pictures, so that turned into a bug, and now I am $1,000 less in somebody's pocket with a nice camera, home-built light box. So now I'm on the photo staff, and it's been 3 years of coming, and I feel good about that.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
What's your favorite Transformers era?
I got to go with the tie between Robots in Disguise and Generation 1.
Ah.
Yeah, and well, that's an unusual answer from someone your age.
Yeah. Just got to say, the all-star voice cast of G1 and the... You know, really, the overall great animation of R.I.D. made that faves.
Yeah, I agree with both of those. I love Robots in Disguise. G1 is obviously my favorite, and yeah. I believe it's also Greg's favorite. But, you know, there's something about G1, even though it had some somewhat crappy, well, I'm using that term loosely, somewhat crappy animation, the voice acting, I think, was superb, and mm-hmm. The toys are timeless. I don't care how exactly. People think they're bricks. They are timeless.
I would much rather play with a Power Master Optimus Prime than anything on the shelf today.
Yeah. Amen to that.
I still find the transformations fantastically fun.
Yeah, I mean, Power Master Prime's a brick, but he's a really fun brick.
Yeah.
What's your favorite G1?
Who directed at me?
I'm sorry.
For some reason, I don't know why, but I have to go with... I have to say it's a tie between G1 Cup and G1 Megatron. Both of have, you know, really interesting transformations, and they honestly do quite a lot for, you know, what people make them out to be, bricks or, you know, old toys that don't do much.
Mm-hmm.
They do a lot.
Do you have both of them, or...?
Yeah, I do own both of them. Also, one of my contenders is Soundwave. I still love that guy. Good articulation, even.
Oh, yeah, and he's, like, one of the pre-Transformers, you know,
yeah.
micro-cassette man or cassette man or whatever he was.
Yeah.
I'm always amazed how some of the extremely old toys... I mean, even Sunstreaker, he was the very first Transformer that actually... was designed, and he still stands up today, in my opinion. I mean, the only thing I don't like about the original Sunstreaker mold is the fact that his hands are detachable and everything, and you pretty much set him to the side for his transformation. But aside from that, he's gorgeous. He's one that I really wish they could reissue, if they ever could.
Yeah.
Well, there's unofficial knockoffs out there that are as good as reissues quality wise.
Yeah, I actually have a Wheeljack that I picked up at BotCon. I have not yet opened it yet because I am saving it for an unboxing kind of review. I still have my Vintage one to compare it with, but I do not, alas.
I have a Vintage one, and he's really yellow.
Maybe I could borrow yours and compare
sure
on a video. But What else is your favorites in the Transformers line, TFR?
Well, I really enjoy things that are just different out of the transformation, some different schemes. I like complex transformations, actually. I was a fanboy of the Classics Ironhide mold, despite its many flaws with him not being able to see over his chest.
He looks sad.
I dated a girl with that problem once.
What are you saying? She was rather chesty, huh?
Yes. Huh? That was actually a joke. I've never dated a girl with breasts so big she could see over.
I was starting to say picture. It didn't happen.
It was a joke, and now you've run it in the ground. You're supposed to just laugh and move on.
Pervert Rapido watches pervertly.
That's got to be a new meme.
If you're wondering, people, look at your iPod screen right now. Well, let's move on to our first segment of the night and discuss that. Time now for our eBay item of the week. This week is a repaint of the
Tomahawk.
What is it? The Hunt for Decepticons, was he? Yeah, Tomahawk.
Yes. Yep.
The Transformers Dark Side Moon, Japanese version of Dark of the Moon, Deluxe Vortex. He has got a remolded head, I believe.
Yeah, he's got the head remold that was seen in the instructions, as well as a hole in his nose cone to put a mech tech weapon.
For the mech tech and the lack of missiles.
Ah, yes, I see that. The eBay item number is 270-773-400-05.
I think you left out a four. There were two fours in our side by side.
I thought I did.
No, I only heard one. Maybe I
heard wrong. 270-773-400-05.
Yes. Okay.
Yep.
Item location is Taipei, Taiwan, and the seller is Kit 116070. Or I'm sorry, no 11. I can read.
You just can't read. You just can't quote numbers.
I'm actually having to look to my right to see it because the way I have my screen set up right now, with all the recording stuff. So please forgive me. Please don't hang me.
We will crucify you.
If you must.
Yes.
Moving on. The item, the price right now, buy it now, is $44.99 with a $12.33 shipping. Thoughts, comments, suggestions?
Ouch. Yeah, especially with that shipping charge. I know places, U.S. Yeah. sellers, that can you can get that cheaper. Yeah. Cough. Catch or pray.
Cheap plug.
Real cough.
He is offering a 3-day money-back guarantee, but seeing as how it's on the other side of the world, I don't
and
see how...
And the buyer pays return shipping.
I mean. Yeah, I don't see how that's a money-back guarantee at all. But the upside, it is brand new, unused, unopened, undamaged item, including handmade items. What?
I think he hand wraps it, probably.
Oh. I was wondering, you know, I read that. It's in the item description, so I'm assuming that he gets a big old lump of plastic and just sits down with a little chisel and just starts hammering it out, and voila, you got a vortex.
I think I would rather buy one.
And then he gets a piece of flat, clear plastic, starts blowing on it really hard until it gets really hot and starts melting, and then just kind of like vacuum forms it over top of the helicopter and, you know, packages. It's handmade.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And then,
well, it,
and
says,
then,
it doesn't
and then
say
the,
that Vortex well, is handmade. It just says it includes handmade items. For all you know, he's taking glass and blowing little figurines and putting them in there with Vortex.
Well, it's possible. At least the evil unicorn isn't blowing them out his rear hatch.
Yes, you know, that would be unfortunate. It would be rainbow colored.
Very.
But if you want the Dark Side Moon Vortex, DD06, it is a exclusive. I forget which store it's an exclusive to. Do you remember?
I honestly have no idea. I just know it's only going to be released in Japan.
Trying to see what the
item. I don't remember.
I don't think the seller mentions it here.
It looks like he's got the same mech tech weapon as
Roadbuster.
Roadbuster.
Hmm. Interesting.
I know because I just tripped over that one in my floor the other day.
Did you not break it?
No, I kind of like kicked it with my toe as I was walking. I was like, hey, that's where that went, because I really don't care about the mech tech weapons.
Yeah, they kind of go off in a pile for me. About the only time I photograph them is whenever I'm taking like an official photo or I kind of want to show it as it came in the package.
Or the resources page or something.
Yeah. But that'll do it for the eBay item of the week. If you really want it, go find it. Go buy it. But I wouldn't recommend doing it on the eBay page, especially for not for this one.
Unless it sells out everywhere else and this becomes the new low price.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I like Insane Galvatron said, I mean, there's cheaper ones out there. I forget what you said Captured Prey has it for.
$31 last time I checked.
Oh, that's much better. Plus, he is in the United States, so if you are a North American buyer, that price would serve you more in the wallet than it would on eBay.
Now it's time for Out My Wallet!
Let's go with you first, Greg.
All right. Well, my haul list won't be that long. We went out to some comic shops here in Lexington, Kentucky, and found a few things we wanted. So nothing really like Dark of the Moon on my list. Well, there's one thing, but for the most part, it's just older stuff. The first thing I picked up was a mint and sealed box Skybite for only $15. What was amazing about this was that the guy working the store, they order toys from Diamond, and you know you can get whole cases of different assortments. And they had a whole case of these that they ordered back when RID was new toys. And they got lost in the back room, and they sat there for 10 years. And he found them and opened them and had them sitting out there for the original price, the original asking price. So, yeah, where are you going to get a 10-year-old sealed toy for original retail? But, you know, I did. So I have Skybite, who I've yet to open. I may leave him sealed. I've owned the toy before, and I mostly got it just to go with my BotCon Skybite. So he can look pretty inside the box. Also picked up, because the guy had some MicroMasters there, $1 each, and I bought a Freewheeler just because I like Lamborghinis. And then from there, I met up with you over in the Hamburg area, and I went in Target and picked up the exclusive Cyberverse 2-pack that they had. They have two different ones. They have an Ironhide and Leadfoot, and then they have a Megatron and Bumblebee. I picked up the Megatron and Bumblebee only because I think Megatron looks awesome in black with purple accents. Bumblebee just... I messed around.
Motormaster.
Yes. I just kind of messed around with Bumblebee a little bit in the car, and then once I got home, I don't even know where he is now because I already have a ton of Bumblebees. All right, so then you and I headed back over to the same comic shop where I got the Skybite. And as we were standing around there talking and, with the guy working there and kept looking at all the stuff he had, I eventually decided on getting a mint on sealed card Armada Star Saber Minicom Pack. Just because of all the Minicom Packs in Armada, that was probably the most memorable one. It was the three jets that, form into a sword. I thought, if I was going to own one set of Minicons from Armada, this would be the set. So I picked them up for $5, which I thought even that was under, wasn't the original retail like $6 or $7?
Yeah, I believe so. But
yeah.
I actually hold Minicons in such low regard that, even $5 is too expensive for me. Now, if I were to get a Minicon set, it would have to be the Star Saber set.
Yeah, I mean, I would think the Star Saber would be the only one that's really desirable. Well, I take that back. What was the one with the three little cars? Because I remember the orange one was really nice.
Yeah, the Energon Shield one?
No. They didn't form anything. No. They were just three little cars.
Oh, yeah. The ones that were... Speed, the one that was designed after Cadillac.
Yes, one was a Cadillac, and then the orange one, I don't know what it was, but it was the nicest one.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
The ones that they knocked off and, like, blew up, like, really large.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, I remember. One of them, I think, was Oval.
I think Oval was the orange one that was really nice. He was the only one. Yep. The other two were pretty crap, but that one's really good. So, anyway, we got those. And then we went to another comic shop in town, and I found a GoBot, which I know, you know, heaven forbid buying a GoBot on a, if you're a Transformers fan, but it was Crasher. Yeah, Crasher's like the insane female GoBot that, like, one of the more memorable characters from
GoBots. Well, seeing as how Crasher was actually homaged in the Transformer line as Fracture, I can see why you'd want Crasher. She's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it was actually in pretty good shape for, you know, a GoBot that old. I mean, it was the paint wasn't scratched up anywhere. Stickers were actually pretty decent. I don't remember how much I paid for it, but I know it wasn't much. I think $5. And I think for a vintage GoBot, you know, it was, especially with that character, that's one of the more desirable GoBots. So it was a good deal.
Mm-hmm. That was a good deal.
Yeah, most definitely.
So that was my haul for the week.
Awesome. Hmm. Tyler, what's your haul for the week?
Let's see. I picked up a Dark of the Moon Barricade.
Excellent.
And I had to get a Dark of the Moon Crankcase to go with him. He has the clip fingers, but I don't really mind that because they're actually dead even. They did a really good job clipping his fingers.
You know, when I heard about the clipped fingers on that toy, that was when I decided I wanted one if I could find an unclipped one. And I have checked every crankcase at every store around here. Because there's like a product code on the back, and if the number's low enough, it'll be unclipped. And I have.
Do you remember what the product code is?
I just remember that's going to start with 0.
0361 is the unclipped.
Yes, and I have not seen it anywhere. I mean, I've spent 10 minutes in the store because they had so many crankcases, going through every peg, looking, pull it out, look at the number, pull it out, look at the number. Could never find one with a number that low. They were all like 10651 or something like that.
Yeah, or 10601. That's all I've seen.
Yeah, my crankcase has got the clipped fingers. Although I really like the looks of that figure, but his ball joints are absolutely loosey-goosey. He is very difficult to get to stand up even straight. I mean, you put his legs straight down underneath of him, and they want to, like, splay out to the sides.
Yeah, I heard a lot of people had issues with that. I was lucky that mine were pretty tight. Just his right leg was a little bit loose, so I put a little bit of super glue on the joint, and that made it about as equal to the other ones, and they're all pretty tight.
Yeah, mine's actually sitting over here on my computer table, just slightly out of reach, but I intend to put some of my wife's nail polish on the ball joint to kind of tighten it up some, because, I mean, it is way too loose.
Disclaimer to our listeners, if you want to attempt fixing loose ball joints, we must clarify that when you put the glue on the joint, you work the joint around and then pop it apart and wait for the glue to dry to reassemble it. If you just put glue in the joint and leave it as it is, your crankcase will be ruined. Thank you for listening. Public service announcement there.
And now you know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe! Yeah.
Dark of the Moon!
He's cool. I really like his looks. I did a photo shoot with him the other day, and the pose that I got him in, it took like 5 minutes just to get him to stay in a pose long enough for me to take the picture. And here's a little snippet. Right after I took the picture, I mean, I literally hit the button. It waited 12 seconds for the countdown, snapped the picture, and as soon as the camera went snap, he falls over.
The shutter snapping in your camera actually knocked him over. He was that unstable. The vibration of the shutter going snap.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, I have a question for you crankcase owners, because I don't have that toy, because I wasn't going to collect movie toys. I only want the NASCARs and the tractor trailers. Can he be reconfigured to a somewhat dog-like mode? I mean, can he move like the head tilt back and get down?
I've never tried.
He has the poseability and definitely in his legs to do something like that. I think you can get the head high enough. It might be a little bit pitched down, but overall he's got some really interesting poses he can do.
I was just wondering, because after seeing the movie and, you know, that there were 3 of those black SUVs, only 2 of them turned into robots looking like the way we see that toy. I was wondering if the third one could be configured to look like the third one. Yes, that's why I didn't go into much detail other than to say what I said.
Yeah, Barricade. I have to say that Barricade is the best deluxe Barricade there is released, in my opinion.
Yeah. I was happy.
The only thing I don't like about it is it cannot, it's not, you can't do the flashing horn whistle mod to it.
Yeah.
Oh, he's not made to where you can add the lights?
No. He's, I think his canopy, the roof of the car is just a little bit too narrow, and I don't think he has the screw holes in the right place now.
I've been so tempted to learn how to solder so I can get one of those flashing horn whistle things and just take it off the little carb, the little plastic thing it's on, and just remove the circuitry and actually put it on Barricade's roof. Like, do it to my Human Alliance Barricade.
That would be awesome.
And then drill a little hole, put the little button up through the roof so you can hit it from the outside.
I do have an original Barricade that, you and I both, we did the modification for it. And I need to find a new battery for mine because mine no longer works.
Oh, really? Mine still works. As a matter of fact, I may turn it on and let Barricade flash his lights at me while I sleep tonight.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
Yeah, I'll get a wink of sleep.
Hmm. What's your favorite out of the two?
I honestly say it's probably Crankcase, but I do have a Barricade fanboy side to me, too. But as a figure, Crankcase has, the vehicle mode is all right. I guess the two are, both have really nice vehicle modes. But overall, the transformation is a little bit more smoother on Crankcase because Barricade had some fiddly bits.
Yeah.
And unless you do, I did a leg mod on Barricade, but unless you do, if you don't do that, Barricade just, his stance is weird. I found Crankcase is very poseable, and just a really good overall figure.
I really like him too, I agree. Although I think I lean more toward Barricade personally because I kind of like the Mustang over the the big
After
SUV.
A leg mod, I really have to, if I were to get one or the other and, if I was in the position to get a leg mod, if you had to choose, and all you need is a nail clippers to do the leg mod with a file on them, and you're done. If I was to choose between the two, I'd probably go for Barricade.
Awesome. Well, we'll move on to my haul. I guess it's the bigger of the three, but there's some things in here I just really couldn't pass up on because of the great deals and everything. I picked up a G1 broadside, missing the weapons. I know the weapons are going to be pretty costly to find, especially the battle axe. But picking up the figure for $10, and he's got pretty good stickers. His paint's real good, his joints are in, well, his arms, which are the extent of his joints, pretty much. They're in great condition, so I think that's a great deal.
Yeah, because I think even trying to track down the guns, finding one that has good paint, because that figure is one of those that has the die cast. Isn't it on part of the landing strip on the top of the carrier?
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. part of the landing strip, and it forms the wings of the airplane.
Yeah, and it seems like those are really hard to find that paint's not chipped with on the top of the gray. So I think to find one with good paint for $10 with or without the weapons is awesome in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It kind of freaked me out, though, because whenever I picked it up and I decided I wanted it for that price, the comic book shop had actually put a price tag sticker right on the paint.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, please, oh, please, oh, please don't be stuck really hard to the paint. So before I bought it, I kind of peeled back the price tag just to see if it would stick to the paint, and it wasn't. So I lucked out on that one.
Got lucky on that one.
Yeah. Also picked up from the same comic book shop an Alternator Sunstreaker, 100% complete, for $20.
Wow, that's a good price.
Not yeah. bad. The only thing that's wrong with it is there is about a quarter inch nick in the black stripe on the paint of the hood or of the roof, but I'm thinking about taking a black magic marker and very lightly going over that little.
I would suggest not using the marker because it has kind of a sheen when the light hits it, especially yeah. the way you oh, like really? To take pictures. I would suggest next time you come to my house, bring it with you, and I have some black paint and a really fine tip brush, and I can just fill that crack in for you.
Oh, sweet. That's what she said. But
face palm.
I picked up at the same comic book shop in the Robots in Disguise Skybite, a mint seal box for $15. Again, I mean, how often do you find a backroom find of a case fresh 10-year-old figure for that price? So, I'll drive 30 miles for that. So I did, and pretty happy to get him. I thought about opening him up, but I do remember how fiddly that mold is, and everything. It's a nice mold. I really like it. But seeing as how it's already a 10-year-old mold or a 10-year-old character in that box, and it's case fresh, I'm like, no, he's staying sealed. Not unless I can find another one loose. You know, I'm sure I can find a loose one for much cheaper. Mm-hmm. He's staying sealed. $15 for a sealed Skybite, pretty awesome. And continuing the Robots in Disguise role, same comic shop, I picked up a Ruination, 99% complete. The only weapon he is missing is Mofar's large gun. And I got the whole figure for $30. And considering it's a G1 mold that's just recolored, and he's really good shape. There's like no paint chips on him at all. He's got almost every weapon. I can't complain for that price. $30. Awesome.
And I just did a quick completed listings search for Skybite on eBay, and only 5 auctions have ended recently. 2 at $25 had no bids. 1 sold for $25. Another one sold for $39. And those are all sealed. And then 1 loose one sold for $10.
So for $10, I could get a loose one.
Well, maybe. There's only 1 sold for that.
Well, I mean, there is a completed one for $10. So, yeah. Ruination, though. Back to Ruination. Let me look at this guy here again. He's just beautiful. I mean, I love him in these colors. I mean, I do prefer the G1 colors a lot better. I don't care for the blueberry color on Ironhide. Armorhide. But, you know, he looks like a black and blue blueberry tank thing. But I do dig the camo on Mega Octane. I just love I never knew if the weapons on the original Bruticus, the Combaticons, if they could all combine together like they do on Ruination. Or is that a new remold? Does anybody know?
The only original Bruticus I have is actually the reissue, which would probably use the modified weapons if they were modified, so I can't tell you.
Well, see, and what's strange is whenever I originally owned the Ruination mold, I actually owned every variation of it. At one time, I had the Generation 1 Bruticus, I had Ruination, I had the Urban Camo Ruination, and I had the Urination, the yellow Ruination. Needless to say, I love this mold. However, I never took the time to notice if the weapons were modded from the Generation 1 version. So if anybody can answer that, that would satisfy my curiosity. Also, I picked up Dark of the Moon Megatron. I owe Greg $15 for that because with all my spending everywhere else, I just didn't have the money to get him. He's getting kind of scarce in this area, at least in the stores that I'm frequent, and I really wanted him, but
because he's not shipping anymore. I mean, the current waves do not contain Megatron, so
yeah. So
once what's out there is gone, unless they do a revision case where they ship more out, he's going to disappear soon.
Yeah. So I'm thankful that Greg, you was a bro for me and stepped up to the plate.
Yeah, what really was great about that price is that it was bought at Target, and they were on sale for $17.99, and then there was a $3 off coupon from the Target website, which I pulled up on my smartphone, and the lady took the coupon just on the phone. I didn't have to print it out, which not. And then, of course, I used my Target Red Card, which knocks another 5% off, So after tax, a $20 figure ended up being $15.09.
Sweet. Nice. Yeah, and also another comic book find at the same place I picked up the Ruination and the Skybite. I picked up a G2 Rapido. He's missing his weapons, but he's Rapido, Pervert Rapido watches pervertly. I picked him up for $2, and I think that's a pretty good price. I mean, he's pretty rough, very played with condition. I've been right trying to keep a straight face.
Where is Chris Hansen? Have a seat right over here.
Rapido, have a seat. For
those of you listeners who's wondering why is he talking pervert Rapido watches pervertly, I made a little photoshopped image of a picture I took of him, and the way the figure is, if you're not familiar with the toy, the robot head does not completely clear the hood, which forms his chest, so it looks like he is like eerily peering over the top of his hood, kind of in a creepy, perverted sort of way. It's like
he's peeping Tom.
Yeah, he's a peeping Tom. It looks as though he's a peeping Tom looking in a windowsill. And so that's where that comes from. But it's funny to me, and it's funny to these guys. So.
He needs a a pedo bear accessory.
Yeah, Rapido is a new pedo bear. But picking him up for $2, I can't complain for a vintage G2 figure. He's pretty awesome. Also, the very last thing I picked up was a Creo Jazz from Toys R Us for $11.99. I have not opened it yet because I do plan on doing an unboxing for this toy, and I kind of want to do that soon because I've been really eagerly anticipating the Creo figures. I was a big fan of Legos whenever I was a kid. So whenever the Built to Rule come out a few years back, I was really excited. And then I saw how poorly they were executed, and I passed on them all.
Yeah, those were sad.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, I bought built one. To I, bought suck. Smoke, I bought smoke screens to check it out, and oh, I regretted it so badly.
What a piece of...
Yeah.
They built to suck.
A piece of brick.
Yeah. The Creos, though, appear to pull the Transformer look off very well. Every review that I've seen about them, everybody loves them. Well, for the most part. I'm sure there's some haters out there, but haters want to hate. And I'm sure I'm going to take a picture of Creo Jazz in the haters going to hate pose. But he looks pretty cool. I can't wait to piece him together. Look for a review soon on the Geek Existence YouTube channel. If I can ever figure out why my camera is taking really dark pictures, I'll get that up there.
You know, I'm resisting buying any Creo. The only one I'm remotely tempted by is the large Prime, and maybe the small Prime, just because I like truck Transformers. But, you know, I'm like you. I loved Legos as a kid. I already spend so much money on Transformers as it is. I don't need another line to collect. So
yes,
if I'm afraid
do.
I buy them and like them, I'm going to end up wanting to buy a whole bunch.
You
it's like,
want
no,
them.
Don't want
you
to sink
will
more money.
Come to the dark side, young Skywalker.
Hush.
Yes. Something dark side.
Something Creo.
Destiny. Yes.
All right, I think
people
that'll
who
do
don't
for...
watch Robot Chicken will not get that.
Robot Chicken? You mean Family Guy?
That was Robot Chicken, wasn't it? Pretty sure it was.
No.
You sure?
It's Family Guy.
Yeah, something Dark Side and Blue Harvest, Family Guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they did the movie and they called it that, but I thought the line came from.
Reference fail.
Yeah, I could have swore the actual something Dark Side quote came from Robot Chicken. I will. My mistake.
That'll do it for this segment of Ouch My Wallet, and let's move on to our last segment of discussion.
When you were standing in the wake of devastation, when you were waiting on the edge of the unknown.
All right, we're beginning the Dark of the Moon movie discussion. I think it is important to note that if you have not seen the movie, you can pause the podcast and come back and listen to it after you have viewed it. Otherwise, you are about to be spoiled like an egg. Spoiler warnings are in effect, yo.
You know, that scene he mentioned the lady was clapping during, we saw it in the same theater. Everybody was hush-hush quiet during that scene. And as soon as Bumblebee got back into car mode with Sam inside, the whole
loud,
theater
thunderous
erupted
roar,
with, you know, applause and cheering.
Yeah.
It was like everybody was just quiet watching it. And as soon as it was over, it was like, woo, yeah!
Yeah, Michael Bay, I'm sure, was quite proud of that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I thought it was awesome. We've always wondered.
An interesting scene.
What happens.
Round this back around and start the discussion off in a proper way. Dark of the Moon came out on June the 28th. I know Greg and I went and saw it at the 9 o'clock showing at our local theater, or my local theater, and we saw it in 3D. How about you, TFR?
I saw it Wednesday night at 7:30. I couldn't go to the Tuesday showing, and I couldn't go to the midnight showing. I was too busy for my ride.
Were you able to see it in 3D?
Yes, I saw it in IMAX 3D.
Oh, you saw
it
in IMAX.
At our local place. But it was kind of... Our experience wasn't as great as I wanted. We're going to go see it a second time pretty soon, probably this weekend. Because we had a seat at the bottom right. We were the second row up and four seats in. And it was... You know, we came out with our necks going like, ow.
Yeah, that's the sucky thing about going to the theaters. If it's a really popular movie, the seats will all be filled if you don't get there early enough, and you wind up having to sit way up front. I know we sat up farther to the front than we wanted to, but our seats weren't that bad.
No, we were just close enough for the screen to look really big and everything was all in your face and epic.
It was close enough though that I have to admit some of the 3D effects were a bit dizzying. I guess is mainly because where I was sitting so close and probably because my eyes actually suck. But you know, for the most part, I thought the 3D was pretty good. What do you guys think?
Oh, absolutely. It was comparable to Avatar in the sense that a lot of 3D movies, you're watching it and you just notice it's 3D. But a good 3D is done so that you don't really notice it. You're just immersed in it. You're immersed in that world without really noticing. You don't stop to think, oh, wow, this is 3D. Or, oh, that was a cool 3D effect. You just feel like you're there. And that's what this movie was. You know, you felt like you were there in Chicago.
Yeah. I was even being down, you know, at the very bottom of the screen, having to look up and... to the left, it was actually well done at a few points in time, just because we, you know, were sat in the theater where we were, there was like a visible separation of the images, but really throughout the thing, it was done very well. And honestly, some of my favorite parts were on the moon going through the particle effects, and they you know, really done, really well separated.
Yeah, there's a number of scenes there that the 3D was so good. I mean, you just wanted to reach up and touch. It felt like it was like right in front of your face, and I love that. I mean, that's true 3D. You know, you just don't get that with the old style red and green glasses and everything. Yeah. These movies, I know the 3D was you know, more or less a fad early on. But it looks like it's really catching on. It looks like the technology is really advancing. And I'm happy about that. The only thing I'm not happy about is I just bought a brand new TV not even 2 years ago, and now I'm really wanting a new 3D TV. And I mean, the prices are coming down to where they're somewhat affordable, but you know, I really don't want to have to replace my TV that I have now.
Well, it depends on what you call affordable. I mean, the TV I have, I'm like you. I just bought one you know, maybe a couple, maybe a year or two before you bought yours. So, man, it's still got a lot of life left in it. But, yeah. I mean, yeah, I paid, it's a 42-inch 720p, and at the time I got it for $700, which was a steal. Not long after that, you could get the 1080p's for that price, and now the 3D TVs are that cheap. But like I said, mine's still got some life left in it, and I've heard they're working on a 3D technology that doesn't need glasses, and calling it 4D. Started as a bad joke in a Best Buy commercial, and then I saw they're actually making 4D, working on 4D TVs, which will be 3D without glasses. And yeah, I may just hold out for those.
Yeah, that's the only thing, really, aside from not actually having the money right now. I know whenever I got the loan to go to BotCon and everything on this year, my wife was really pressing me hard to try to get a 3D TV because she wants one in the worst way, because she's more of a TV movie watcher than I am, and I love going to movies and I love watching movies at home, but I don't watch a whole lot of TV, and so she would be the primary user, so she's putting a lot of heavy pressure on me about that, but you know, I told her, I said, no, I said, you know, I have plans for the money, and TV is not one of them. Plus, with the 3D advancing as far as it is, you know, I'm with you. If they can come up with a 3D where you don't need glasses, and I think that's very close, and not as far away as a lot of people think, I'm willing to hold out for that.
And, you know, something that surprised me, though, is especially with, like, the PS3 being capable of, you know, doing 3D for the movies and things, is why haven't we seen 3D video games yet?
There are 3D video games. NBA 2K11, Call of Duty Black Ops, they can all be played in 3D.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. That's awesome. Yes.
But moving back around, getting off the rabbit trail to back to the Dark of the Moon, what was the number one head turner in the movie for you? I know what it is for me. I'm wondering if it's the same for you, both of you guys. Let's start back off. Tyler, what's your favorite?
Well, definitely favorite scenes wise. I really enjoyed the Dredge chase scene from being on the highway to the Mexican standoff. You know, that had to be, yeah, it was definitely clever with the Mexican standoff. You know, it's definitely well received by people in the theater. I mean, just tell people a few people cheered. But the most head turner for me, I mean, I read all the spoilers, because, you know, I'm spoiling myself like that. But when Sentinel turned, I was just surprised that it was so early, really. And I thought he would try, you know, I mean, he didn't need any convincing that he was a good guy, you know, to the Autobots, because, hey, you know, he was the Prime before Prime, you know? I was just a little bit surprised. I thought they'd have him just, you know, kick some, you know, some destroy some Decepticons, because, I mean, really, I saw he was a really awesome fighter, and the way he would, you know, he fought against Optimus was, you know, pretty stellar, but I'd like to see that implemented against some Decepticons first.
Well, I think that kind of goes against the whole thing with the character, though. I mean, he's already made this treaty with Decepticons. Why would he kill his own troops? Because he's going to be commanding them soon. He's going to need their help to accomplish his mission. So it kind of makes sense that he wouldn't go kill them Decepticons first.
Yeah. I felt it was just a little bit a little bit too soon. I mean, I'd love to see that, but again, it wouldn't make sense. And there are a lot of things I would like to see that wouldn't make sense. I mean, of course, you know, if Sentinel was just a good guy all the way through, but then, you know, what would there be in the movie aside from just, you know, random fight scenes? I mean, there wouldn't be much plot in the movie. Anyways.
Shockwave could have done more.
Yeah.
If Sentinel hadn't turned, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Sentinel turn was the number one WTF moment in the whole movie. You know, just the way he, you know, Ironhide was just completely blindsided, you know, and then...
Yeah.
You shot in the back.
You shot in the back and with a cosmic rust cannon.
From someone he thought was an ally. That would be like me and you, you know,
well, fighting, I mean, this,
and then all of a sudden I shoot
this
you in the back.
This was the Prime before Prime. You know, I mean, he is up there with Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
And you would not expect Optimus Prime to turn, you know, let alone the Prime before Prime. And whenever he blew a hole in Ironhide's back and then proceeded to shoot him again with the Cosmic Rust cannon, I was just sitting there like, no, they didn't go there, but they did.
Yeah,
because we stayed spoiler-free, so we didn't know he was going to turn. You know, I thought with the way the story was progressing up to that point, that they needed Sentinel Prime to make it happen, and they were all like, okay, let's hurry on this guard Sentinel Prime. We get to, protect him from the Decepticons. I was expecting them to maybe try to kidnap him and try to make him do it, So, yeah, the turn completely caught me by surprise.
Yeah. And since, reading the spoilers, I would have expected it to go a little bit differently, because I think he was more of a, he wasn't much of a Decepticon in the fact that what he had minds for was saving the Transformers race at the expense of the humans. And, he didn't want to kill the Autobots. It wasn't like a decision that he, just wanted to all out kill everyone. He was thinking from his point of view that, Cybertron was, salvageable, when really in the truth, most likely there was nothing you could really do. I mean, he pretty much, from what is, seen in the movies at that point in time, and the presently, Cybertron is just a wasteland, and all the other Transformers are either dead or scattered across space.
Yeah, I kind of took the whole the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few quote, which was a throwback to the voice actors, earlier roles.
Yeah.
But I kind of took that as it wasn't talking about the humans. A lot of people interpreted that, well, there's billions of humans on Earth. There's only a few Transformers, that saying that line didn't make sense. But I think it was more about the Autobots, because, like I said, he had killed Ironhide. The other Autobots were held captive, about to be slaughtered. I think that was more Sentinel's way of saying, look, I don't want to kill my fellow Autobots, but the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. I would rather kill a few Autobots and save the entire race than to have the race die. I don't even think humans were on his consideration, because he considered us so beneath the Transformers. Because he told Prime, he said, on Cybertron, we were gods. So I think he kind of looked at it as, humans are just insignificant. Why does it matter? It's just all about us, the Transformers. And I think that was what he meant, is he'd be willing to sacrifice a few Autobots for the greater good. And Ironhide just happened to be the first one.
What do you think about Prime's reaction to Sentinel Prime turning? It's at first you could see the look on his face. He was taken aback by it. But what do you think about his ultimate reaction or action to the actual turn? He killed Sentinel Prime. At the end, Sentinel Prime was begging for mercy. And you would think that the leader of the Autobots, who quotes, freedom is the right of all sentient beings, to just, say, screw you, and I'm going to blow your head off, and he does. It was almost out of character to me for Optimus Prime.
Not really, because when you say freedom is the right of all sentient beings, the one who wants to enslave sentient beings has to be stopped in order to ensure freedom for everybody else.
Yeah, but you
that's
you
like
would
saying,
kill
well,
a
everyone
being.
Has the right to be free, so therefore we should have just let Hitler do his own thing.
No, well,
no, you got to take
no,
it out.
No, I mean, imprisonment is an option, and I'm not trying to get into the political aspects of this, but whenever you think about it, what right does Prime have to kill Sentinel Prime for his turn? Imprison him, make him feel sorry for his... he was the leader of the Autobots, for crying out loud. Maybe if he was imprisoned and shamed by the other Autobots, he would come around,
keep in mind, as he said, Cybertron was a wasteland. It's not like whatever judicial system that the Transformers may have had before the Great War... It's pretty much not intact now. It's war has been raging for in the movie verse. I don't know how long, but that's all people know is war. Where someone's in the wrong, you kill them. There's no judicial system on Cybertron that we're aware of. There's never been any real reference made to it. And where would they have imprisoned him? They couldn't get back to Cybertron.
Well, I'm sure they could.
There's no Earth prison that could hold him.
Well, they could make one. Why? They are the Transformers, for crying out loud.
Well, I don't know. Megatron broke loose. From the first movie.
Yeah,
I just think the mindset and the mentality when you've been at war that long is you just kill the enemy. Yeah, that's the only way to ensure that he's not going to do more bad things.
Yeah,
and it's just that
I think
mindset.
They could have gone a different way with the ending, more one, to lengthen, you know, lengthen the end and kind of tie things up a little bit, because I felt it wasn't terribly abrupt, but it was, you know, I mean, there's still, you know, hundreds of protoforms, or not protoforms, but Decepticons still out there. They didn't kill them all, because they weren't all in Chicago. They say, you know, they had pillars around the world. You saw that one scene in South America.
Yeah.
There are Decepticons there, and I think they left that a little bit loose. I think what they could have done, one, was to have Sentinel, you know, betray in a different way. I think it would have been interesting to actually have Sentinel set up his own kidnapping instead of, you know, indiscreetly killing, you know, Ironhide and, you know, blasting his way out, basically. I think it would have been interesting to have him try to fight off the Decepticons, tell, you know, the other Autobots to retreat, and, you know, have, like, a huge force sent there. And then, you know, once the Autobots retreated, go with the Decepticons. But I think an interesting way to finish up the movie would be to, you know, have him, you know, spare Sentinel's life and then really explain to him, because he'd been deactivated for so long. He didn't know Cybertron was, you know, completely basically just a metal ball floating in the sky with no living things on it. Best to be explain it that, you know, our home world is gone, this is our home now, and then for Sentinel to accept that and then, you know, not kill Ironhide and everything be all right, you know.
Well, I don't know how quick he'd been to accept it, because they pretty much built his character up as thinking, you know, hey, we don't need to be here. Because he said, you know, hey, on Cybertron we were gods, here they refer to us as machines. Yeah. I think the idea of just living on Earth and being somewhat subject to the humans in the sense that you have to, you know, obey their laws and respect them, instead of just being the rulers of the planet, their own planet. It seemed to me like he wasn't real keen on that idea. It would have been very out of character to have him just accept that at the end. Yeah. And my thoughts on as far as him killing Ironhide, as far as I think that was the best way to have him turn from a theatrical sense, because yeah, yeah. Because if you remember, we weren't spoiled. So I'm going to thinking, okay, Sentinel Prime is going to be a good guy. He's going to be fighting alongside Prime. They're going to be working together. So for the person who doesn't know what's happening, you know, we don't know, okay, he's a bad guy to start with. How's he going to turn? We're just thinking he's a good guy. Okay, so if the first however long it was into the movie, I wasn't looking at my watch because the movie was so good. You know, we're thinking he's a good guy, and we're really liking him. In order for us to really hate him as a villain, he's got to do something heinous. You know, if he just did this stage of kidnapping, yeah, that would have been pretty cool, but it wouldn't have made the people who didn't know he was going to turn hate him. Because when he killed Ironhide, I'm like, no, Ironhide, he's been one of the main characters in all three movies. You can't just, Sentinel, you know, I hate him now. Yeah. And, you know, then I think that's why they did it that way.
And I'm kind of thinking, too, didn't we see something about the, you know, after we saw the movie, didn't you see something about the twins actually supposedly being killed off by Sentinel in that scene?
I think it was in the novelization is where I think I read someone, cause I haven't read the novel, but someone posted, because we know that the twins were originally going to be in the movie. We saw the cars, you know, pictures of the cars when they were filming, you know, and then they decided to edit them out later and not use some of the scenes, cut them out, whatever. And I was kind of glad, because I really didn't care for him in Revenge of the Fallen. I didn't like the way they acted. Didn't like the way they looked. The heads were just really goofy. But from what I hear in the novelization, they were supposed to be there in the first part of the movie. And when Sentinel turned, he was supposed to have killed Ironhide and both twins. And I think someone said, and I'm going to look for it on the second watch, but when at the scene where Ironhide is being killed, somewhere around there you can actually see pieces of the twins, like some of the car parts laying around. Because I guess when they did their edit, you know, those parts were already in there. So they just cut out some of the scenes they were in. But, you know, in a scene like that, you know, the stuff is still in the background, supposedly. I have to watch it a second view to see.
I'm kind of the thought, though, that if they had left the twins in there, if that scene is indeed, you know, was supposed to be played out that way, I'm kind of on the inclination that more people would have cheered than went, you know, in that scene, because most people didn't like the twins.
Yeah, I think it would have really, and maybe that was a consideration. Maybe when they saw the backlash on the internet about how behaved the twins were, you know, maybe that's why they decided, well, hey, this scene is supposed to evoke this emotion. As badly as people hate these two characters, they're liable to have the opposite reaction. Maybe that was part of the reason they decided to cut. I don't know, but I think if it were played out well, like when I was starting thinking about it, I really didn't care for the twins in the other movie, but at the same time, the emotion that came across in that scene, I think had they been killed there alongside Ironhide, if anything, it would have helped me to like them a little more, at least from a respect point of view, because it would have been kind of sad to see them just get blown away by a traitor. You know, I mean, all the ways to go, get shot in the back. You know, if anything, that would have evoked some sympathy from me for the characters.
Yeah. I mean, Ironhide, I mean, you couldn't have got it any more emotionally high than to have him turn on Ironhide himself. Like you said earlier, he was a central character in all three movies, and he was the Autobot weapons officer. You know, you'd think he'd know how to cover his own back, but, you know,
he wasn't expecting it back there.
Yeah, he wasn't expecting it from his former leader.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I honestly have to say, though, I mean, it kind of choked me up a little bit, you know, because I almost felt like Sentinel Prime betrayed me, you know, as a fan and a viewer of the movie. I was putting my trust into Sentinel Prime because he was the Prime before Prime, you know. And, you know, seeing how highly Prime regards people and regards all life, and he was Prime's predecessor, that is completely out of character with what my mind had set up for him. And then whenever he betrayed Ironhide and he betrayed the Autobots, he betrayed me as a viewer. And
I felt betrayed. That's the effect they were going for.
And it did. It came across perfect. This is something that you just didn't have in Revenge of the Fallen.
Yeah.
And this is what sets, in my mind, Dark of the Moon far and above what Revenge of the Fallen was, because with the betrayal and the emotion that I had into it, honestly, every time I saw Sentinel Prime after that scene, my stomach kind of churned a little, I have to admit, because what he did made me sick. You know, it was so heinous. And
yeah, that's
good
what I like
movie
about
telling.
The movie.
Yeah.
People can criticize it for the plot holes, and, you know, even I have done so with trying to reconcile it with the events of Revenge of the Fallen. Like, for example, you know, Sentinels crashed on the moon, obviously from back in the 60s and 70s. The Decepticons knew he was there because they were dragging out those, you know, there were drag marks from that satellite photo. You know, but yet, when Megatron was revived and during all the events of Revenge of the Fallen, no Decepticon said, hey, by the way, that plan you made, Sentinels up on the moon. You know, it's just, I know they didn't know of Dark of the Moon when he wrote Revenge of the Fallen, but they knew of Revenge of the Fallen when he wrote Dark of the Moon. So to write something that changed history, that kind of conflicted with the previous story. But, you know, you can point all that stuff out, but the movie, what it really had going for it was they actually captured emotion, and that's what a good movie will do, is it will get you emotionally invested in the characters in the story.
Yeah.
And none of the other Transformers movies have really gotten you that emotionally invested to where you actually cared. Like when Jazz died, I was kind of upset because I like Jazz as a character. But honestly, that Jazz, we barely knew him. And even though he was sacrificing himself for the other Autobots to get away, it wasn't that obvious that that was what was going on, that they ran away and he stayed behind to fight. And it didn't really draw you in to really feel bad for him.
Yeah. I think the most emotional scene in TF1 was definitely Bumblebee getting captured. I mean, that had a, you know, combined with the music, I think it had a more emotion to it, even though it wasn't a death. I mean, Jazz was definitely like, okay, just got ripped in half, on to the next battle, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think Revenge of the Fallen tried to capture that whenever Prime died, quote-unquote.
Yeah.
But honestly, it wasn't that poignant to me, because the way he died, I mean, it just so, he was punked out. And, you know, it was almost, the numbers were so stacked against him that, you know, even Prime would not have been expected to survive that. So the ultimate outcome of the fight with Prime in the woods was, okay, he's going to get killed, you know.
Yeah.
So whenever he did get killed, you know, you weren't really offset by that, because the buildup to it made you emotionally accept it. Okay, he's just dead, you know. But this right here, it was so sudden, so unexpected, it just caught me like that.
Yeah.
And it held me throughout the movie because, you know, I think that's the reason they did it so early in the movie, is because they wanted you to get used to Sentinel Prime and everything, but they didn't want to give you a whole lot of Sentinel Prime in order that, you know, if it happened later in the movie, you'd have been like, okay, now wait a minute, you know, this is totally out of character for him. Sentinel Prime still had a little bit of
mystery
about him. You know, you don't know, you know, his whole past. So
you could definitely tell he was angry with the director. I mean, definitely he was. You know, how dare you talk to me like that? I mean, I'm a god, basically.
Yeah.
Well, not to mention the way he came out of the chair and kind of attacked Prime.
Yeah.
At first, I saw that and I thought, well, that's just like a instinct reaction. He just sprung up. There's somebody right on top of him. You know, but why would you react initially that way? You know, I mean, wouldn't you woke up somebody on top of you at first glance? We see who it was, and okay, this is a friend. You know, but I mean, he just kind of was quick to leap on him, which at the time was out seemed, well, that's odd. But then after we saw what happened, oh, it makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I thought, you know, my thinking on that, whenever he jumped on Prime after he got reawoke, was the fact that, you know, he was. The last time he was functioning, he was fighting the Decepticons, and you know he drifted through space for how many years until the Ark crashed on the moon. So his last memory was fighting the Decepticons. You know, so as far as he knew, he wasn't aware whenever he first was reawoke how many years had passed. So as far as he knew, he was still in the battle, and his ship had been boarded by Decepticons. He had blacked out, reawoke, and he had been boarded. And
right.
In my mind, that's the scenario that the reasoning that I had come up with for why he jumped Prime. You know, because it's like he jumped Prime, you know, and he's like, you know, I'm going to stop this invasion, and then everybody's like, no, we're on your side.
He kind of realizes who it is.
Yeah. That was my rationale for that.
But I think you were talking about the emotional, kind of backtrack just a second here, the emotional pull Ironhide's death had compared to Prime's death in Revenge of the Fallen. I think the other thing that played into it for me, yeah, I got a little bit of a lump seeing Prime get killed, you know, mainly because I thought, okay, it's Optimus Prime. They're not going to make the mistake they did in 1986. Prime will not be killed. So I was caught a little off guard by that. But it didn't have the same pull because, like with Ironhide, I just knew he was gone. Because in the movie verse, people tend to stay dead except for the main characters. But with Revenge of the Fallen, okay, Prime's dead, but the whole movie I kept thinking, okay, how are they going to bring him back? Because I knew he was coming back, it was just a matter of how. So the death, you know, lost some of its meaning when you know they're coming back.
Yeah.
But with Ironhide, you knew he was gone for good, so there was a little more emotion there.
Yeah, that's not bringing back a pile of rust.
Yeah. Moving on, Megatron, what do you think about his lack of impact on this movie? I mean, he was pretty much just there for nine-tenths of the movie. Then in the final scene, he decides, you know, I guess Carly kind of convinced him, but at the same time, you know, he just showed up, whooped up on Sentinel Prime, and then was dispatched, you know.
Well, I kind of took it just from, I mean, just looking at his appearance. He was so badly damaged at the end of Revenge of the Fallen, he had not yet recovered. And I think he mostly was just laying low. I mean, he was still trying to be in charge and exerting his authority over other Decepticons. But I think he was avoiding battle and conflict because he knew he couldn't take much in a fight. He was, you know, not 100%. And it's kind of like you have a war veteran who knows what he's, you know, really tough guy. But then if he's, you know, got some severe injuries, like, you know, I'm not going to put myself out there where this injury could cause me to misstep and get killed. You know, so you kind of lay low while you're healing, and that's what I took it as, because he was just not in shape to fight, so he, being the smart leader that he was, laid back away from the fight, let his grunts do it all for him. And I think that with the end was Carly, because she had observed earlier when Sentinel had kind of crushed his head a little in his head wound and was letting him know, hey, I'm working with you, not for you. And, you know, I guess just kind of knowing that Megatron's the type that would, you know, have the ego to want to be the leader. And so she just kind of played that to get him to go attack Sentinel. You know, I think it was just, she was just manipulating him. You know, play
typical
on his ego.
Woman.
Yeah, play on his ego. Yeah. Talk about how he's just going to be Sentinel's bitch when this is all done, so that, you know, his ego will kick in and he'll be like, oh yeah, well, I need to go exert my authority right now.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, I wish he was in the movie a little bit more. I mean, trying to at least fight. I mean, I understand that he was damaged, but I mean, really, I think this is the coolest that Megatrons look. One being the completely, you know, spiked out
box of knives, a box of knives and forks spilled out on the floor.
Well, I think with his truck mode, he was much more badass looking vehicle than the other two movies.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the jet mode was just kind of there. I mean, there wasn't really any badassery to it at all, because it was just there. It was just kind of a jet mode. Tank mode was all right.
That's one of the things with me. I love futuristic alt modes, as long as they have a base on something that is realistic. I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of the G1 futuristic designs, like season 3 and on, kind of work with me, is because, you know, in a warped sort of way, they kind of look like something that, you know, might eventually come to be. But
like Hot Rod, they had wheels, you had the engine sticking up out of the hood, and then a cockpit. Mm-hmm. It's very much like our cars, only more advanced.
Yeah. If you saw somebody driving a Hot Rod car today, you know, back in the 80s, that would have been like way, way futuristic. But nowadays, you know, you might look at it and go, hey, cool, that looks pretty cool. You wouldn't be surprised by it, you know. You kind of expect something like that, which is, you know, why, you know, the futuristic designs work. But whenever you take a design, and I understand, I fully get the fact that he was an alien tank, an alien plane, but he was just too nebulous in the way he looked for me to attach to it. I don't want, if you're going to have an alien tank, now, Shockwave, Dark of the Moon Shockwave, his tank mode works for me, although I don't fully accept him as a tank. He looks more like a rolling cannon to me.
Did he even transform in the movie?
I don't think he did, no.
No, he just popped out of the cockpit of the driller.
Yeah, he's pretty much, you know, not even a transformer in the movie, really. He just showed up, glowed his eye a few times, went bam, bam, and there he goes.
Somebody posted, I kind of agree with him on this point, standpoint. It was more of a fanboy bait, because, you know, Shockwave, ooh, you know, you get the air, without reading the spoilers, you get the air that he's going to be the main, you know, new villain. And I think it would have worked if they would have had him be more threatening. Because, I mean, he survived since the beginning of the movie, but that's just because he popped out and then just left. And then, you know, the driller did most of the work, and Shockwave didn't really dispatch anything. He didn't really do too much damage. I mean, Starscream in the scene in Transformers 1, I mean, of course, since he's a main character and all, he can do damage. But, you know, he was doing damage on Ratchet and Ironhide. I mean, you saw him taking hits, and I feel it would have been better if he was in more of that type of, you know, taking damage, and then they all just kind of ganged up on him and dispatched him, or Prime came through and killed him like that.
Well, my thoughts on the whole Shockwave thing is that he was only in the movie to be a distraction. Because, I mean, like you said, basically what he did was just, random Decepticon thug number 4. I mean, he was just another grunt on the ground shooting and being shot at. He, you know, he didn't really put up that much more of a fight than some of the others, you know, with him being taken out. I think the whole reason Shockwave exists is, I think this Sentinel Prime thing, for those who were avoiding spoilers, they wanted them to be surprised. So Shockwave is pretty much there because, number one, he was, you know, a fan favorite character. So it would be easy to make him look like he was going to be the big baddie, so that you'd be caught completely off guard when Sentinel turned and ended up being the big baddie. Because I think if they had just built, if they hadn't had Shockwave in there, then who would they have billed as the big baddie? Yeah. Well, then people would have started suspecting Sentinel Prime. Okay, where this new character comes along, you know. So I think it was a distraction to keep you from suspecting Sentinel Prime would be one of the terms.
Yeah. I agree. And to be honest, you know, I was fully expecting him to be the bad guy. I mean, that's...
Especially when he showed up at the beginning, when he, you know, popped up out of the ground and Prime's trailer flipped over and transformed, and he just like, Prime... And then he leaves. That kind of set it up. Like you're thinking, okay, they're going to have a showdown later. It never came.
Yeah.
Well, he does show up, and he does destroy Shockwave, but, you know, it's kind of anticlimactic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And see, what I don't know, did y'all watch all the trailers or, well, you know, see them on TV before? Or were you
I saw the first couple, but I saw quite a few. The teasers.
Yeah.
But I tried to avoid all trailers and teasers if at all possible.
Yeah. See, because I was looking at one, they had the one, I do believe it was three different ones where Prime punched through Shockwave's chest, and they showed that. And some people were speculating, you know, Shockwave, they couldn't really tell, and then when they had the HD versions, they could tell. But in one of them, they had Prime and his voice, in his kind of like grunt when he killed Sentinel, or, well, started fighting against Sentinel, because he, you know, that very angry type of yell that he did. And a lot of people in that led a lot of people that didn't spoil themselves by reading all the spoilers to think that he was very angry at Shockwave, and that would be like the decisive scene in which he kills the big bad.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was what I thought when I saw that trailer, is that I thought, I can't believe they spoiled the ending, you know, in the trailer that they showed Prime punching, you know, Shockwave practically in half with his brass knuckles. And yeah, I was one of those, because avoiding spoilers, I saw it and I thought, they showed that. I just accidentally spoiled myself watching a trailer, but turns out I didn't, because he was just killing Grunt number four.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing. Now, what do you think about Sam taking out Starscream?
I'm okay with it. I know a lot of people are upset because they wanted to see Starscream die by another Transformer, but Sam has been like the human, you know, hero in all these movies. And, you know, to me, Starscream being the sniveling weasel that he always was, you know, to me, it's fitting to have him be taken down by someone you wouldn't think would be worthy to take down a Transformer.
Yeah. And throughout, like, you know, in the first one, he was chasing after him. I mean, Megatron's more the person pursuing him in the first one. But Starscream had some deals with him in the first one, shooting down the rescue helicopter from afar, and then Revenge of the Fallen chasing after him, spitting on him, all that stuff. And, you know, I guess he was kind of just, of
like
course, I don't know
revenge.
How to, yeah. Yeah. And Sam, and I guess Sam finally got his revenge, and I guess it was an okay way. I guess they kind of put it in there for comedy and to kill him off. I mean, I definitely wouldn't have minded, you know, say if Ironhide lived, you know, would have gotten a nice headshot off of him, or, you know, something like that, or it would have been a little bit, it wouldn't have been my favorite if Bumblebee would have taken him out, because Bumblebee is pretty hyped up. Usually, most of the time, he's, you know.
Yeah, I would have personally liked to have seen Starscream buy it at the hands of Megatron.
That would have been interesting.
Although, the way I kind of had heard that Starscream was going to die in one of those threads that, you know, somebody didn't put spoiler warnings and everybody got mad. That was one of the threads that I actually saw where somebody said, yeah, Starscream buys it in the film. I expected him to die, but I didn't know how. And I was expecting him to die by the hands of Shockwave. You know, kind of a la, you know, the original Starscream in the 86 movie. I was going to see Shockwave, you know, blast him, and he'd just pretty much blow up to bits.
You know, I would have thought that way, but I guess the reason I never even considered one of the Decepticon leaders taking him out was the fact that, yeah, he was kind of a sniveling, you know, it's mostly done through the voice acting, a lot of the wording. He was, you know, he never really did much for betrayal in the movie series. You know, we never really saw the Starscream that wanted to, you know, overthrow Megatron and take over command. He just came across as like a sniveling little wuss.
Yeah,
that,
he kind of did serve the Decepticon cause a little bit more in the movie verse, because if you remember in the first movie, in the credits, he was the one that took off looking for Decepticon recruits to bring them back. And what did those Decepticon recruits? They brought back Megatron. So, in essence, Starscream had a hand in bringing back Megatron. You know,
he didn't seem like the traitor that would, you know, that Megatron would kill. Starscream didn't come across that way. I know a lot of people transpose that to him just because, hey, it's Starscream. Starscream's the notorious traitor. But this Starscream wasn't.
He
wasn't a traitor.
He was definitely very loyal to the Decepticon cause. But I must say that whenever Sam did take out Starscream, I have to say his death throes were very Starscream and just It served him so well. Prancing about, my eye.
I can't see.
I really think that Charles Alder was channeling, Chris Latta in that one a lot. You could definitely, in the voice itself, it seemed a little bit more high-pitched than his, cause in the first one, he was a little bit more, low-pitched, deep. In this
very
one, he was
sniveling.
More high-pitched.
He was very sniveling in the first one.
Yeah, and this one he was definitely more like, ow, my foot! I definitely like the part where he was like, I'm going to kick you.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought that was funny too, because he's swinging around by the rope that's still attached to his eye. And so he's trying to kick at him, but he has no depth of perception because one eye is bad, so he can't really hit him. One thing I thought was odd though was, and I know by this point Sam had already stabbed the bomb into the other eye, so he was completely blind, but I never understood why he didn't just fly away. Even, when he just had the one eye taken out and Sam was dangling from him. Yeah. I mean, he's a jet that can fly in space. And from a character standpoint, I know it was his death scene and they were trying to make it somewhat comedic, but it would just made sense just from a warrior standpoint. Okay, this human just shot me in the eye. I'm blinded in one eye. Transform or in robot mode and just fly way up until Sam gets to where the air is too thin and he can't breathe.
Yeah. You'd think that they would have extra, different optical sensors rather than just two in the eye or, however many they have in the eye socket. You'd think that they'd have, optical sensors, in different places at least, or that
in
they
the
wouldn't
crotch.
Be affected too much like that. You'd think that maybe they'd have, infrared or, some different way of being able
sonar.
To visualize it.
Yeah, he's got one eye in the crotch.
Yeah. I mean, I really think that would have been interesting to see him try to, I think the main reason, not logically, this is a movie, but, going along with the logic of the movie is because it was so distracting that, he was trying to fly away, he was trying to do things, but everything was messing up because it was just so, his circuitry was probably screwed up in that, and he couldn't function correctly.
Yeah, cause, well, that's one, the other thing I thought was odd, now that you mention it, was the, even after the other eye had been stabbed, but the bomb hadn't gone off yet, and he kind of tried to fly, and he got up to the top of the building, and then crashed back on top of it. I'm like, okay, yeah, he can't see, both eyes are out. But still, why would he crash? I could see crashing into something because he flies into it, but he flew up over the building and then came back down on it, and that I didn't understand why he didn't just keep going up.
That didn't make sense either.
I think it was driving him more crazy because you saw him when he was like, hitting his head on the ground trying to get the stuff out of his eye.
Yeah.
I think he was driving his circuits crazy, whatever,
Yeah. Now that you mention that, I kind of remember that too. What do you think about Carly replacing Megan Fox's character?
Well, I think it was very obvious just the way the character was written and the things that went down that was originally supposed to be Michaela. They just did some quick rewrites, for a couple lines to mention that she had dumped Sam and now he's with somebody better. But just the whole thing, especially ending with Bumblebee dropping all the rings, it just would have been good closure to the Sam and Michaela story of, because the first time he tries to get the girl, the second time it's all about them saying they love each other, and then this one would have been them getting engaged at the end to get married. And I was kind of surprised that they kept, they changed Sam's line. I'm sure they would have gotten engaged with Michaela, but now it's a new girlfriend and not been together as long, telling B to slow down. And I'm kind of surprised they even left the ring part in there at all.
Yeah.
So that was a little distracting just because it seemed like, Sam and Carly's relationship was a little further than it should be for how short a time they've been together.
Yeah. And I think they were trying to hit, some people hit on that earlier about, in the spoiler, it was really more of a spoiler, was that but how they were going in depth and not too in depth, but given a good back reason why Sam dumped Michaela. They're discussing possible scenes that they had from one of the scripts that somebody got a hold of, or in the novelization that it was more like she just couldn't take it anymore and didn't really like where it was heading, but it was just kind of like abrupt, insert new girlfriend in the movie. They didn't really explain it too well.
Yeah, I wish they had have explained it a little bit better, but as far as aesthetically, I do prefer Rosie Huntington-Whiteley over Megan Fox. She She has a little... Yeah. I think that's gently putting it that way. She has, in my personal tastes, better looks than Megan Fox. I mean, I think she trumps
always it. Tend to gravitate toward brunettes. I like the dark hair. But, you know, at the same time, I kind of have to agree with you, though, because Megan Fox, although looking at her characteristics, she's the kind of woman I should be extremely attracted to.
Toe-tones.
I'm just not. Yeah, well, not even that. She just comes across as a little too slutty and trashy to me. And,
yeah,
you know, I don't know why. I can't figure out exactly what it is about her, but she seems kind of
Carly, trashy. Carly's character was a lot more high class. You know, she had the swagger to her, I guess. She came from a well-off family and everything. She didn't have the strife that Megan Fox's character had.
Yeah, I think along the lines with what you were saying earlier about how they just swapped a few lines, I think that they had to go a little bit more. I mean, they could have done more on explaining why she wasn't in it, why Michaela wasn't in this one at all. But I think, you know, it wouldn't suit her, one, how they met at the White House, but it wouldn't suit her to have, you know, a nice job with Dylan and being able to have, you know, a classy, you know, job in a nice place, and then, you know, ultimately having Soundwave as her car. It wouldn't really tie that together well with, you know, the Michaela Baines character at all. It wouldn't go with it. I mean, I could not see her having anything more than a, you know, a
trashy, you know, waitress mechanic job or something.
Yeah.
I don't. Well, at the same time, she was good with cars, and she was working with her dad in his garage. And if you notice, when they were in that shop with all those fancy cars, there were a lot of pictures of her with her boss, and they were like at racetracks and around cars. So I could kind of see them, you know, mentioning just with a brief exposition of how Michaela would have ended up in that position because of her knowledge of cars, she'd be around this car guy, you know, professionally. I think it could have worked out. I think they could have explained it pretty easy. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. Now, what about Dylan, the GB Blackrock type character to me? I mean, here's this well-off character who was on the side of the Decepticons. I kind of half expected him to have a change of heart toward the end of the movie, but he didn't.
I really don't get why the part that, you know, I mean, it wasn't really that the Autobots were going to, you know, decisively win against the Decepticons at the point where he himself tried to fix the thing. You know what I'm talking about. But it seemed a little bit like he was trying to build some, you know, a better rapport with the Decepticons with them. But, you know, at the point where, you know, the Autobots were putting up a good resistance, why wouldn't he just try to stop? I mean, why would he rather try to be a slave than,
I don't think, you know, he believed the Autobots were going to turn it around. I honestly don't think. I think he still thought they were going to win. What it struck me as is why would humans help the Decepticons to start with? I think it's about self-preservation. If you remember in the first movie, you know, Megatron was like, Sam, give me the Offspark and you can be my pet. Because obviously your pet is going to be treated better than, you know, your workhorses. And I think that's what he was angling for, was I'm going to completely cooperate, try to earn in their good graces so that when we're all slaves, maybe I'll have it a little easier than everybody else.
Yeah.
So I can almost kind of see why he would go that way. It's a self-preservation. If nothing else, remember at BotCon they were talking about the upcoming toys, and there were a couple toys they couldn't reveal because until after the movie was out, because I guess it would have given away spoilers. I honestly think that Human Light Soundwave will have Dylan. That's why they didn't announce it, because they didn't want to show that he was lined with Decepticons, because again, they wanted that to be a surprise.
That is true.
And I'm really hoping for, I mean, I might pick up Human Light Soundwave. I'm really hoping for some, just some more, you know, General Deluxes, and I'm hoping, honestly, just for myself, just a crankcase Voyager version. It's a little bit off topic, but...
Yeah, now the crankcase, that brings up another point, though. It was only in maybe one or two scenes in the whole movie. What do you think about the crankcase as the robot and also as a dog-like character? I mean, it was... Was it just was he a dog, or was it just one kind of running on all four, a robot running on all fours.
I took it as he had a robotic alt mode, much like Ravage. Yeah. Or like Laserbeak had the bird-like one. And I just thought it was neat. I was really fascinated. It kind of reminded me of the twins from G1, where you had, you know, Pounce and Wingspan had, you know, the same alt mode, but different robot modes. Or no, they had the same robot modes, different alt modes. And I think this was kind of like a reverse of that. They all had the same alt mode, but different robot modes. And to me, I don't know why, but I just really liked that concept.
Yeah.
Which is why I was asking earlier if those figures could be put into a dog-like shape convincingly.
Yeah. I think they should. I mean, I would love to see some, you know, figures if they could release all three. But, you know, just the practicality of, you know, all the figures are packaged in their vehicle mode. If the fact that they had the same vehicle mode, and even if they're packaged in their robot mode, you know, parents would be on the basis that, hey, you know, these are kind of all the same. Why would I buy three, you know, of the same things?
Well, I think the two that had humanoid forms were pretty much identical. It was just the dog one that was different. So they don't need two molds.
Yeah. I think, well, the one that looked like crankcase, and there's one that looked a little bit more like crowbar, I guess, and he was a little bit more, even more spindly. I think he was designed to be even more spindly.
I'll have to take a closer look at him next viewing, because for some reason, again, we were kind of close, everything was kind of big. I kind of, at first glance, thought they were identical, except for the dog one. But, I mean,
I think they could work the... I think that would be really interesting if... I mean, I think that they could do all three of them differently. And trust me, I'd love to see just, you know, three different versions that are completely different in robot mode out of the same, you know, vehicle. And if they could do it in the same, you know, dimensions of the vehicle and not actually have any difference in the vehicle... look at all except from, you know, the undercarriage, I think that'd be put well. But I think they could go with just making a dog version out of the vehicle.
Just buy two of the current robot and one of the dog and be happy.
Because, I mean, really, they do look very similar to each other, and that's why I think the Legends version has a different alt mode and a different transformation to try and differentiate it from the on-screen version, because they were different, but they were very similar, and it was kind of hard to tell.
Even the dog one, I thought, seemed to have a lot of the same characteristics.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like you know, Duran wasn't even sure that it was a dog as opposed to one on all fours. I mean, they were very similar in just their aesthetic. It just, obviously, they, you know, that one was built on four legs instead of two legs, two arms.
And I felt that it was more not less of a, you know, I mean, a dog thing is a good description, but more of a, just a simple, but very bestial version of, you know, what a Dread would be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he seemed very, very primal, almost predatorish in his look. I think that's the whole deal behind the way he looks, is he's supposed to be kind of like the predator in his appearance.
Yeah, and more if the, you know, I mean, the Predator, I mean, they're pretty tactile, you know, with their technology and what they use, and I really think that Crankcase's head, especially in toy form, looks a lot like that, and I guess that was what Bay was going for.
Yeah.
And the designers, too, I mean.
Winding this down, any of you all have final thoughts, Greg?
I had something earlier, but the conversation steered another direction, then I forgot it.
Fail. What about you, Tyler?
Well, really, I thought this was quite an interesting experience, and thanks for having me on, definitely.
Oh, we're happy to have you here. I mean, you're welcome back anytime. My final thoughts on the movie, I really enjoyed it. I can't wait to see it again. Well, I'll get back to you here in a second. I can't wait to see it again. It's a fantastic movie. Like I said earlier, and one of the parts I was talking about, I think it's far and above better than Revenge of the Fallen. I enjoyed the 3D. It was really good, although for me personally, it was a little bit disorienting at times, I guess, because of all the action going on. I did appreciate the lack of the shaky cam in this movie. You could see a lot more of the action, a lot more of the robots. I appreciated the slow motion instead of the shaky cam. And I think that pulled off very well.
Yeah, I think just that one change, if the first two movies had done away with the shaky cam and maybe add a little slow motion so you could see what's happening, those movies would have done even better than they did, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But the thought, the one other thought that I had in the movie, something that stuck out, this was, when you asked what was like the most head-turning, shocking moment, was obviously Sentinel turning, but my favorite moment in the movie, and this just because me personally and my love of the character, was seeing Barricade return. I would rather see him get killed than just mysteriously disappear and wonder, hey, what happened? You know, I mean, yeah, he's a character I like seeing him live, but there's some closure there. So it's what happened to Barricade? He was in the first movie, he seemed to disappear. Okay, well, now he's back, with Decepticon's kicking butt, he's shown back up again. And, you know, I could have sworn my first viewing that it was him who executed Q/Wheeljack. But I heard other people say they thought it was Soundwave.
Yeah, it actually was. You saw that his gun delivered the thing, the final blow that popped his head off and ultimately deactivated him.
So is it nice to see him actually take an active role in killing somebody before being killed? But, you know, he wasn't just, you know, when he turned up in one of the trailers, he was shown being taken down in, like, the background by some humans. Yeah. And so my first thought was, okay, he's just going to be like Bone Crusher in the second movie. He's just a model they're reusing to save money in the background to be taken down and killed. But I was actually surprised to see him get so much, you know, camera face time.
Yeah, he actually had a lot of screen time.
Yeah, and so I was happy. I was like, yay, Barricade.
Yeah. I was definitely happy because I saw the trailer and I thought, yeah, he was going to be a background character. And I was thinking, yeah, at least he's going to have some closure. But then actually seeing him being one of the main Decepticons in the prisoner scene was actually very nice. And I really enjoyed the fact that, you know, he did something. And, you know, finally after, you know, being gone.
The only thing that would have made his appearance better is if he had actually, like, seen Sam and referred to him as Ladies Man 217.
Yeah. I would like to see him,
like,
you know.
Ladies Man 217!
Yeah. I think it would be interesting if he took a personal vendetta against Bumblebee and, you know, before he was killed and just, like, you know, either, you know, shot Bumblebee somewhere that wouldn't have killed him, but somewhere that would have, you know, hurt, and then later see Bumblebee take him out.
Yeah, oh, that would have been nice.
Yeah. Well, one final point here before we wrap up the new characters, Q and Dino. What was your thoughts on those, Tyler?
One, Q, I think he had, you know, there wasn't much of an emotional attachment to him. He seemed like an okay, interesting. I wasn't too great on the whole head design of him.
Yeah, he kind of.
His attitude was all right. But I think the way he went out was actually quite shocking, actually, because he was, you know, executed, you know, begging for his life in cold blood. You know, he kind of, you know, it wasn't a very climactic or emotional scene. It was just kind of shock value more of along how he was killed.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm like you, he didn't have enough screen time to grow an attachment to him to really feel anything for his death. But I think it goes back to they kill people off for an alternative reason. It's to make you feel something for another character. You know, like Ironhide was killed to make you feel hatred for Sentinel Prime. I think he was executed to actually make you worry about Bumblebee.
Because
you know, they're all going to be able to be executed. Boom, they actually pop one, and now Bumblebee can get it. You know, it makes you actually feel for a moment that Bumblebee could bite it here. I mean, this is the last movie after all. Mm-hmm. Starscream just died, you know. That was my thoughts on him. He was just pretty much there to make you worry that Bumblebee was going to
die. I'm just curious as to whether or not they have a definitive name for him, because if you looked in the credits, he is credited as Q/Wheeljack. So, which is he, Q, Wheeljack? Yeah.
But in the movie, they referred to him as Q two or three times.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, and he, I mean, then why even credit him as Wheeljack, you know?
Yeah, I think it was more of a fanboy, you know, wanting to please the people, not fanboy, because, I mean, definitely wanting to please the people that he had the namesake, but I think on Ferrari's end, and the fact that they named him after, you know, the creators, and, you know, the fact that he died, I mean, I think it would be kind of a jerk move to, you know, tease people that his name was Dino and then actually call him Mirage in the movie. And I think Ferrari kind of took a hold on that and definitely didn't want him credited as Mirage, even credited as, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't think Dino didn't die.
No, he didn't die.
No, he lived.
I love his alt mode, and I can't wait for his toy. Mm-hmm. His robot mode, I was a little bit disappointed in it, but it still looked cool enough to me.
Yeah, and I'm kind of worried about his toy now, because I'm hoping that they give him the arm blades, and I hope that they're, like, you know, thick enough to be, you know, non soft plastic, mm-hmm. because I have a fear that, one, they're going to be an important piece in the alt mode or an important piece in the transformation, but they're going to be really soft plastic, yeah, like, and I really don't like that on my toys.
I actually half expect those to be a cheat. They'll just tuck up underneath the car mode somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. And the arms will go
underneath the undercarriage. Yeah. They won't actually make up any car panels, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I really hope that, you know, it's nice hard plastic and that they're not, you know, sharp, but they look, you know, because a few Transformers, they have weapons, like even Sentinel Prime's bladed weapon thing, it looks like a convincing sword weapon, but it's thick enough so where it can be hard plastic without being, you know, that raw rubbery stuff.
Yeah. Well, for me personally, I have to say I will buy two of this toy simply because of his alt mode. If you've been listening to this podcast for a number of years, since the beginning, back before when we were a general podcast, General Toys podcast,
yeah.
I mentioned that I'd bought some Hot Wheels. I am a sucker for Lamborghinis and Ferraris. I love those type of cars. The Italian car, I don't know why I love them, you know. And and he is a Ferrari, Enzo Ferrari, and I think it's a beautiful car, and I can't wait to get my hands mm-hmm. on one.
Yeah, and I really hope that it's licensed too, because I know Sideways wasn't licensed as any of the toy forms because they didn't want him as a war bot. But in the game, which is specifically designed for him to be a war vehicle, he is explicitly licensed as an Audi R8.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can cheat enough, though. I mean, he can look close enough. I mean, look at the other Transformers. I mean, even way back in G1, I know they can't get that close anymore, but even the classics. They mm-hmm. look close enough to Lamborghinis to be Lamborghinis.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. I mean, they definitely have the elements there that, you know what they're supposed to be.
Yeah. But I really like both characters. Wheeljack, Q, I really wish that they had not put that Q/Wheeljack in the credits because, you know, that's just going to cause some debate. But his character was kind of meh to me. I didn't care for the head sculpt. He looked mm-mm. almost like a Transformers Destro with little sprigs of hair coming out from him.
Yeah, I thought they tried to make him look like Einstein.
Yeah,
that's what they were going for.
Okay,
one more thought real quick.
Go ahead.
What about the fact that Leadfoot actually had a beer gut?
Oh, yes. And the fact that they did not do the stereotypical redneck. I'm so happy they did
it. I was glad for that. And I think it's definitely a reference to where, you know, the record started in the UK comics to have them with the accents. But I think they were really well done, much better so than the stereotypical, you know, any type of redneck accent, having them have, you know, the Scottish and the English accents.
Yeah,
definitely helped.
I appreciate that since I have a southern accent and I didn't want to be stereotyped in the movie.
I love NASCAR and I was excited to have NASCAR Transformers. A couple things. One, I was disappointed we never saw them as clean race cars. I was hoping that the weaponized versions would just kind of be their, what do they call it, stealth force.
Yeah.
You know, like mm-hmm. we saw some of the other bots just spring all these guns and stuff out in car mode. And I was hoping we'd get to see them a little bit as normal cars, and we didn't.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised we didn't even see them on a racetrack.
I thought they'd have a backstory. I mean, with Dylan as a racer, I mean, before, you know, people were spoiled and thinking that he was working with the Decepticons, it would have made more sense to see them out on the racetrack or at least scan a race vehicle. And do something that involved having their story built up. Because it was kind of like they were just implanted.
I kind of envisioned them being
in a race, and
the protoforms crash in the infield and scan mm-hmm. scan a couple of the race cars as they go around, and then maybe a big battle breakout right there at a NASCAR race.
I was expecting there to be like a race going on. And the mm-hmm. race cars would actually be the Transformers in disguise, actually running the race. Yeah, and like something would happen, they would be called, they would be needed, and all of a sudden they'd just spring up all the guns and then leave the track.
Yeah. And see, what I was thinking that maybe, I think it would be interesting to have even if there were more dreads, like have them come onto the track knowing that they were there, or some Decepticons, you know, maybe flight Decepticons, or just, you know, like maybe even a pace car bee, you know, something like that, and have them kind of set up at a, you know, at a race. I don't think the protoform coming into the racetrack, one, it could definitely kill people in the center. And two, I don't think the Autobots, I don't think they crash down anymore. I think the last time the Autobots, well, definitely the last time that we've seen the Autobots crash down was in the first one. Yeah. But I think they come, like, in spaceship or in, you know, some form that's a lot safer for humans.
Yeah. It's
but I think possible. We can extrapolate, because the lady said they don't let them leave that area because they're a-holes.
Yeah.
So you got to, okay, where do they get their alt modes? Well, Cape Canaveral's in Florida, and it's not that far from Daytona, which is...
Yeah.
You know, NASCAR, you know, that's when the NASCAR Super Bowl event happens every
yeah.
year. So it's feasible how they could have got those alt modes, you know, given
mm-hmm.
where they were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I believe that'll do it for this episode of Geek Existence Transformers. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. Special note, we have a reboot of a podcast series called Geek Existence Gadgets and Tech, hosted by Kelly McCuddy and Daryl Keithley. Check it out. They've got one episode under their belt, and they're going to be recording later this week for the second episode, so look for it. And also check us out on our YouTube channel, Geek Existence, as well as Facebook and Twitter. This has been an episode of Geek Existence Transformers, part of the GeekExistence.com family of podcasts. Thank you to Tyler, a.k.a. TFR Cool, for joining us on this episode, as well as credit going to Linkin Park for the song Iridescent, the clip used to introduce the last segment in this show. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week, everybody.